Thanks for the response. O re ditse Star FM, o re ditse thulaganyo ya The Classics Planet, o re ditse e jalo lentswe la ga Papa Blok mo mogaleng re na fano le me Karen Bosman, founder of Karen Bosman Sustainable Solution. E le kgang ya Water Wednesday program e tlisong jalo ka ditebogo kwa go wena ke setlamo sa metsi Midval Water Company. Karen, what are some practical strategies to balance hydration and sanitation with water conservation?
Okay, so I'm going to start with the sanitation part of it because that's quite interesting, actually. And I always refer to it as one of the environmental, the legacies of colonization on the environment.
Mm-hmm.
If we think of the nutrient cycle, the nitrate cycle, how do we get our nutrients that goes into our body? Is the cows and the cattle, we eat grass. The corn, the mealies we eat, we grow as grass, and those things needs nutrients, needs nitrates.
Yes.
Then we eat them, and now we have excrement, and we put that excrement into water, not to soil. Where it's supposed to be, the nutrients must go back into the soil. Then we pay a lot of money for fertilizer that's made from fossil fuels to fertilize the soil again with these nutrients. We, in fact, put our urine in our rivers, and then we import urea from China to replace the nutrients in our soil. So the way that waterborne sanitation is being done is, in effect, unscientific and detrimental to our river health. We can't fix the problem of eutrophication in the heartbeat because we have waterborne sanitation. So if we start talking about sanitation, we need to start to think differently about sanitation. And I've actually had a paper once, a presentation on the history of sanitation. And all the civilization, the Indus civilization, the ancient Greeks, all of them had land-based disposal of their human waste, which was then dried and reused as fertilizer. And it's only from the 1800s that the British said, no, we need to put our human waste in water. And because we were a colony of Britain at that time, they also have all their colonies, including South Africa, follow their approach of waterborne sanitation. But in a water-scarce country like South Africa, waterborne sanitation simply does not make any scientific or logical sense. So slowly but surely, we need to start thinking about other ways or alternative sanitation where we can separate our yellow waste from our black waste from our brown waste, reuse our yellow waste, the urea, as direct fertilizer, for example, at a sports stadium. Imagine what home ground advantage you will have if you irrigate the sports field with the urine collected during a sports match with all those guys having their beers, and then you irrigate your field with that. It's completely safe and harmless instead of having imported urea in which you get the grass green for the sports field. And also we can reuse our black waste as well. There's technologies and inventions that we can say we dry the black waste, we compost the black waste, and we reuse it to fertilize instead of putting it through a very expensive sewage plant and it ends up causing eutrophication in our rivers. So the way we need to think about sanitation needs to change in the same way we think our thinking changes about sources of electricity from coal fire based to solar or hydro or wind.
Someone may ask, how do cultural practices and beliefs shape the way communities prioritize water for physical needs?
I must say that, you know, as a growing up as an Afrikaans kid, some often visiting farms in the old, there nearby you, Potchefstroom area, we grew up learning children shouldn't waste in the water because old people need to drink it. And I know in many traditional cultures, there's also, especially in more rural area, if a child, you know, urinates in a river, it's against the traditional belief, and he's told that the crocodile will bite him. So culturally, traditionally, we have a, a bigger respect for water. Than the more urbanized we become, the less our respect, because the more urbanized we become, it becomes easier to get water. You just open a tap and the water is there. But people living rurally in traditional cultural villages knows we need to walk far to get the water, or our water source is precious and we can't waste it. So I think often we need to maybe embrace those cultural practices. I always use the example that if you go to a real traditional village, you don't see litter, because the chief and the goggles, they will have your skin if you litter in their village. But if we come to townships, there's a lot of litter because there's no cultural social structure that teaches people not to litter, not to waste in the water. And we need to bring those kind of mechanisms back to say, listen, guys, we need to respect our water and we need to not litter, because the litter ends up in our water, contaminated even further. And always remember, water flows. Once you've used it, once you've flushed the toilet, it's not gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else needs to now take that water, treat it, so that another person can use it. Mm-hmm. Water doesn't belong to anyone. Water belongs to everyone. Mm-hmm. And we need to treat it with respect.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the response. Now, let's talk about schools and public institutions. How can schools and public institutions educate about the physical importance of water in everyday life?
I think, Papa Blok, what got me interested in water, I was like 13, I think grade 7, thereabouts,
mm-hmm.
when we went as a class, a school trip, to the Daspoort sewage works. And it was, you know, for a kid, small kid, it was number one, scary, but number two, fascinating and so interesting. And if we do more school visits to places like the local sewage works, to places like Midvale Water Company, let them show you the process that they have. People become more aware of where their water comes from, the pipes that it flows through, how the system works, how we need to reuse and so on, then it has two effects. Children can teach their parents to work more safely with water, and kids become enthusiastic. You know, the older we get, the less ideas we have. Kids have 1,000 brilliant ideas within a second, and they are great problem solvers. And we need these kids to be aware. And so how can schools help is, I would say, at least once a year, work in a school trip or a visit. And I'm sure if these companies with their corporate social responsibilities want to sponsor schools, that's a great project to get the bus from for them, get the lunch for them, take them to the water infrastructure, show them where their water comes from, because that's how we learn why we need to treat it with respect and how precious this resource is.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are the physical consequences of neglecting water sustainability and conservation at an individual level?
What are the
physical consequences of neglecting water sustainability and conservation at an individual level?
Well, like I just mentioned earlier, obviously we get the increase of infant death rates, but we also get diseases. A lot of waterborne diseases are spread through communities like rapid wildfire, things like cholera, like we saw in 2023 in Hammanskraal. Typhoid, that was in 2005, caused 3,000 people hospitalized in Damas.
Mm.
So it has an immediate health impact if we don't look at our infrastructure properly. And you know, you can live without food for quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
but 4 days without water and you'll die.
Mm-mm. Yes.
So it is critically important that we maintain and protect and sustainably manage our water infrastructure and not tamper with pipes and put up illegal connections, because we just contaminate, you know. You go and you contaminate other people's water and you make them sick and they can die.
Having talked about that, how does water quality affect physical health? And what actions can individuals take to ensure their water is safe?
Okay, the first thing is what immediately if from water quality, you get chemical contaminants that you can group into organic or inorganic, and then you get microbiological contaminants. Now, the microbiological contaminants have a more direct and health effect, while the chemical contaminants have a more indirect, longer-term effect. So let's talk about the direct health effect first from the microbiological contaminants. If the water isn't properly purified, if there is, you know, cows poop in the water, untreated sewage, there's a lot of fecal matter in water, and people then ingesting that can make them sick. So if you are not sure about your source of water, always then let the tap run or scoop it in a bucket, add a capful of Jik, because Jik is chlorine, it's a disinfectant, will kill bacteria, add a capful of Jik, and let it stand overnight, because you can't just drink Jik straight away, that will hurt you from a chemical perspective, but letting it stand overnight, the chlorine gas will disappear, the chlorine will kill the bacteria, and it should be safe to drink the next day. If you're still not sure, if you boil the water, that high temperature would also kill any remaining bacteria. That's from a microbiological side. From a chemical side, if we have, for example, mining activities, mining acid mine drainage lowers the pH. At a lower pH, heavy metals can become dissolved in water and it reduces to a harmful state. For example, chrome would reduce to chrome 6. Chrome 6 can cause cancer. So it won't kill you within a week, it will kill you in 10 years. And therefore, we must also not only remove the microbiological contaminants, but also remove the chemical contaminants.
Now, lastly, how can technology like apps or smart systems help people physically prioritize water in their routines?
You know, we also, there's another Afrikaans expression which I will translate is om te meet is om te weet. To measure is to know.
To know, yeah.
And if you can't measure, you can't manage. Now, what the benefit of apps is, it allows people to participate in measurement. For example, you see a photo of, or you see a spillage of water, you can take a photo, upload it in the municipality, on a municipal website, and the municipality can come and take action. Or you measure, the water affairs measures the flow of water, and you get an app, and you can see how the levels in the Vaal Dam drops and how more critical our water supply situation becomes. In the Day Zero drought in the city of Cape Town, they had an online app website where people could every day go and see how much water is left for them to use. So I'm really a firm believer in turning measurement data into something that's visually accessible, because that helps us to see. If we can't see something, we think it's not there. But when we see something, we're like, oh, okay, it's there, and we do something about it. So an app turns the invisible into something that's visible and makes us want to do something about it.
Karin, op die einde, ek gaan sê baie dankie vir die tyd wat jy vir ons gegee het en jy ons geleer, and I hope that in future, when we ask you to come again and talk to us, to teach our listeners about this scarce commodity called water, that you and I and our listeners cannot live without, you will do that. Much appreciated.
Papa Bloke, it was an absolute pleasure. I am so impressed by you guys who has a Water Wednesdays. That's really, really absolutely brilliant, and it will be my absolute pleasure to come back and we can decide on a topic for a day and talk water sense on your Water Wednesdays. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Star FM 102.9 megahertz for that very brighter side of you. Re wetsa jalo what a Wednesday program re ne re buisa na fano le Karen Bosman, founder of the Karen Bosman Sustainable Solutions CBSS ka bokutswane. Me wele tlhoko gore programu e ya what a Wednesday e tliswa jalo ka ditebogo tota kwa go wena ke setlamo sa metsi. Setlamo seo kise.
Midvaal Water Company is a water services provider that supplies bulk clean water to the mines and the city of Matlosana municipality. Established in 1954 as a bulk water supplier for the mines in the Vaal Reefs area, Midvaal Water has grown to become a formidable player in the water sector. To this end, it has expanded with augmentation of plant areas and distribution zones to include the Greater Klerksdorp, Orkney, Stilfontein and Hartebeesfontein areas, as well as Vierfontein village in the Mokaka local municipality in the Free State. Daily, Midvaal Water treats 120 megaliters of water legally drawn from the Vaal River, with 80% of the product supplied to the municipality, while the balance goes to the mining customers. Through its infrastructure, Midvaal Water fills the municipal reservoirs with clean water, and the city of Matlosana distributes it to residents and other customers. Midvaal Water, your partner in water services delivery. Purified excellence.
Ga gona gore re ka e garela program e ya Water Wednesday ntle le ka go tsela e maru a pula. Okay.